Council.
This is News Talk 1260, WFTW, Fort Walton Beach, a Cumulus station. The following program is paid for by BitWizards Information Technology Solutions.
And it is 8:30. It's time for BitWizards Tip of the Wand. In studio with me right now, I've got Vince and Sam. Good morning, guys.
Good morning, and good morning to our listeners.
Good morning.
Good morning, Sam. Good to see you. You know, Vince was solo last week, so
I heard.
So now you're back on again, kind of be able to prop him up a little bit. How about that?
Well, I listened last week. I was listening because I was not unable to attend. I was speaking at a local tech event, and so I was unable to attend. But I did listen to Vince's solo act, and I texted him last night. Let him know. I was very impressed. It was very engaging. I'm an IT guy, not really a software development guy, so I always find this very fascinating stuff to hear from someone who's been in the business for quite a long time.
A few years, anyway. You've been with it for how long, Vince? How long have you been involved with this?
With IT?
Yeah.
Close to 30 years now.
Really?
Yeah.
My gosh, you start when you're 2 years old?
I am 53.
So. Oh, you are? You hold your age well. Oh, man. So anyway, guys, did you have a good Valentine's Day?
Fantastic. No major screw-ups, I guess.
Oh, nothing really bad happened.
I'm still married, so
you're still married.
We succeeded one
more
year.
So what did you do? Did you take your wives out for dinner, or what did you do?
Bonefish. Took my wife out to bonefish.
Bonefish? Yeah. You know, Vince?
Well, we call that rookie night, so we don't typically go out on Valentine's night. There's too many people out
there.
Plus, I got an 8-year-old and a 10-year-old, and so trying to coordinate that. So we pick another night during the week to go
out. Gotcha. I fully understand that. I think we've all been there, Vince.
Absolutely.
All right, let's get right to it.
BitWizards Bits and Bytes.
All right, from Forbes. Well, it's kind of scary. The number of ransom attacks has grown, and it's crippling cities and businesses. And I know that everybody knows most recently that we had the city of Pensacola. But what's interesting is some of the data that's out there. And according to newly released data, about 205,000 businesses and organizations indicated that they fell victim to ransomware attacks in 2019, which is up 41% from 2018.
Wow.
And in the last part of 2019, the average ransom to get your files returned was $84,000, nearly double of what it was the year before.
Oh, my gosh, $84,000. Now, I'm kind of curious. If you pay that money, do they always, always turn it back on?
Well, it's in their best interest, too, because they want to set the precedent that if you pay us, then they'll get paid, right? You know, that's their deal.
Okay.
So for the most part, what we understand is that, you know, typically once those things are encrypted, you know, there's really no other option other than to wipe your drive clean and start over and lose everything or pay the fee to get it unencrypted.
And hopefully they will follow through. As Vin said, it is definitely in their best interest, although I have heard of people doing this as almost like to teach people a lesson, just to encrypt their stuff, and they have really no intention of ever unencrypting it. I have heard of that. But for the most part, what we've seen, what I've actually seen personally in my own life is business owners refusing to pay that on principle and saying, I'm not going to pay these people a bunch of money and we will start over if we have to. Even if it's more expensive to wipe every single computer and try to start over again, we'll do that rather than hand over this money. Unfortunately, those are really the only two options that you have if you were unprepared for a ransomware attack when it happens. Is you either pay the bill, fingers crossed, you go buy a bunch of Bitcoin and figure out what is a Bitcoin. And then after you've purchased it with real money that you can actually buy real things with, and now you have this digital currency of Bitcoin, then you send that off to some unknown person with some crazy address on the internet, and hopefully they will return with a password for you to put in and to decrypt your files. Or you can just wipe everything and start over. The scary part about wipe everything and start over is make sure that whatever it was is truly, truly gone, because ransomware is like a virus and it spreads. And the worst thing in the world would be to spend tens of thousands of dollars to wipe everything, start all over. And then that one employee who actually caused the ransomware in the first place go, okay, I finally have my computer back. Now, what was that email I had just opened right before all our computers crashed, and double click the same email all over again?
Oh my God.
And a lot of people don't understand the cost too. It's not just paying the ransom side of it. Even if you format and start over, you know, we have a client that we do software engineering for, but we do not do their IT for. And it's a manufacturing firm, and they came in and they had a ransomware attack. And basically, it shut down operations for almost a week. I know that they lost millions of dollars.
Oh, no.
And what they elected to do was to go back in. They had us and another IT firm come in and help them reformat all of their drives, restart, redo all of the firmware on all of their routers, all their firewalls and everything to get it back up and running.
So they didn't pay the ransom.
They did not pay the ransom, but I guarantee you that they probably paid probably 6 to 10 times more what it would have cost them to pay the ransom. Now, you know, it was one of these deals where the owner of the company said, based on principle, they weren't going to do it.
Right.
But I can tell you, it cost them a lot of money. And the issue is that ransomware continues to be a major security concern for, you know, small businesses, mostly because they don't have the resources to properly defend against it, or they don't have the technical knowledge and understanding of what they need to do. But, you know, there's things that you can do. A lot of the things of ransomware have to do with human engineering, have to do with training and helping your people understand about recognizing what not to click on an email, what is okay, and sort of recognizing the signs. You know, at BitWizards, you know, we try to protect you at four levels. We start at the firewall, and then there's antivirus, and it looks at different packets that are coming over the wire to see if there are certain signatures that, you know, have to do with ransomware or virus or things like that. Then we protect you at the machine level. There's antivirus on the machine, both at the server and the workstation. Within your email in Office 365, we protect you with Advanced Threat Protection, which also does that. And then the last thing, as I mentioned before, is training, teaching people what they need to do. And, you know, sometimes people will tell us, hey, I don't want to put my stuff in the cloud because I'm afraid and I think that that's less secure. You know, just to give you an example, in the Microsoft cloud, Microsoft has 3,500 security engineers. And they are evaluating 6.5 trillion threat assessments every day and coming up with solutions or ways of letting people know and understand how to fix those particular things. That's a lot of protection there. So if you think you're going to do it through, you know, just making it up as you go along or, I'm going to disconnect from the internet or I'm going to do this. There's a lot of ways that a virus can get in and hit you.
And
wow.
I'd like to, every time we talk about ransomware with clients or potential clients, one of the things I hear back so often is, well, I don't have anything they would want. And it's because we're thinking in an analog way. If I have a lot of money in my house, squirreled away under the bed, then someone's going to want to break into my house. I have to protect my house. But if I'm living in someone's backyard in a tent, I don't have anything for anyone to break into. Why would someone break into my tent? The difference with ransomware, though, it isn't whether it's valuable to somebody else. It's whether it's valuable to you. So think of this more like a high profile kidnapping case where, they have something. They don't really care about the thing they took. They just care that it means something to you. And that's where ransomware kicks in, because I hear this so often. I don't have anything anyone else would be interested in. When we talk about all the layers of protection we want to put in place. And I let people know that they're not trying to get in there because they think you have something they want to steal. You're not, you know, Boeing or someone like this who may have some trade secrets that are the government, that the national security relies on. What they care about is, do you care about your files? Because if you go without your computer system for an hour, a day, a week, however long it takes you to come back, how much would you lose and how much would you be willing to pay just to get back up and running again as an organization?
Now, that being said, what would be some of the steps that a person could take as far as backup goes? Would you back up on a hard drive, back up to the cloud? Because if you get the ransomware, and let's just say on principle, you say, well, I'm not going to pay that money, just for an individual, if you will, or maybe a real small business. So if you backed it up and they did the ransomware on you, you could say, well, fine, go ahead. We don't care because I have it all backed up in these different locations.
Absolutely.
I'll just pull it back down again and go on my way.
Yeah, backups are a clear way of defending against this. You know, I mentioned those four levels, and that's trying to keep stuff from coming in. But on top of that, you know, we do backups. So we back up the entire machine. We back up also the individual file folders where specific pieces of data are kept. And that way, if they do have an attack, we can isolate it to a particular area, because you're not going to 100% protect against these things. Mm-hmm. You're going to probably do 90%. And like I said, a lot of this has to do with human engineering, right? Where you try to get somebody to click on something. I mean, just the other day, I got an email telling me that Sam wanted me to transfer $1 million to his account. That wasn't you, was it, Sam?
It was. I've been waiting for that to go through, Vince. I just don't know why you're
it didn't work.
Delaying so long. Well, and with that security of the backups, one of the things we do with our clients is we have them start storing their files in the cloud to begin with. And then we go another level and back that up. A good example of this is a company up in Niceville who brought us in to work with them when they got hit with ransomware. Fortunately, they were storing all of their files in SharePoint Online, which is what you get with Office 365. It's already bundled in there. And we had helped them move all their files in there, and they got hit with ransomware, and it was this big deal. Nobody could work. The entire company was taken out. Oh. And so we get on the phone with Microsoft, and we said, Microsoft, we need to roll back all of their files to Friday at noon. And Microsoft presses a few buttons on their end, and then everything's exactly back the way it was Friday at noon.
Perfect.
They've rolled all back. On top of that, we've then backed up their SharePoint on top of that. So even if Microsoft fell through, because they do 14 days worth of backups, we do an additional 90 days on top of that, so
oh
that we
gosh.
Could even go back even further if we had to. Now, of course, you lose any work that happened in the meantime, but that's the main protection against it, that and training.
Yeah, based on everything we've been talking about, what is the one thing that you would say that would help people from getting ransomware? Just the one thing.
Be careful what you click on in your email. In other words, take a look and examine each one. Don't just blindly go through and click on things. And if you get things that you don't know who they came from, don't open them. If they're suspicious, they probably are an issue.
Yes.
Gotcha. All right, guys.
BitWizards, what's up our sleeve?
Well, what's up our sleeve? This is where we talk about our key topic for the week. And this week, Vince and I were talking about this last night, about what we're going to talk about today. And one of the things that we thought would be a good topic to discuss would be, how much IT does your business need? Like, depending on the size of your business, or how long you've been in business, or what you do in your company, what is the right or the appropriate amount of IT that you're going to need for your organization? And really, there's probably four levels of how much IT you could have. There's the base level that everybody has, which is, I have a computer, I have an iPhone, I know enough to be dangerous, I'll take care of this myself. And for a lot of organizations just getting started out, it definitely feels that way. Like, well, I've had email for 20 some odd years, I'm sure I can figure this out for our company as well. And I have my own Facebook page, surely I can figure out social media presence from our organization as well. That would be the first level. The next level up, though, from there would be what we call the break-fix model. It's the industry term for that is break-fix. And break-fix can happen a couple of different ways, but really all it means is, when something breaks, you find someone to come fix it. And in a break-fix model, there's no preventative maintenance. There's no investment into it. It's really just, I'm going to keep trusting that everything is moving along as smoothly as possible. And when something goes horribly wrong, then I will call in the expert to come in and fix it. It's kind of like you would with your vehicle. You're going to trust that it's going to work. And when it doesn't, you go to the mechanic.
And yeah. That expert
no
is...
No preventive maintenance or nothing. When it breaks, and then,
right.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, that expert is your second cousin twice removed who knows IT, who thinks he can tell you how to fix this specific thing.
That's right. Yeah. Like, I know that kid. He's got an Xbox. He must know a lot about computers. So I'm going to have him come work on my company's files. A funny story about that. When I used to work in radio, we had someone come volunteer on our radio show, and he was an IT guy. And so he had volunteered for one of our people. And so he took over some of the web presence that we were doing. And then he had a falling out with the radio station, and he went in and he wiped out their website.
Oh.
And he just put a big picture of a goat's rear end pooping. It was all that was the main landing page for the radio station for about an hour.
Oh, no.
This is the problem with break fix. This is the problem with that nephew's cousin's brother twice removed is,
oh, yeah,
when you allow them into your organization, you are allowing them a certain level of access to things that, that you need to be able to trust them. Or you can work with, there are organizations definitely out there that do, rather than what we would call managed services, what they do is they just do break fix. They are on call for when you need them. Typically, it's pretty pricey in that model because the only way they can predict their revenue stream is by pushing up the prices as high as they can so that when you do call them, it really is an emergency and then they'll swoop into the rescue.
Yeah, and you're at their mercy because you don't know what it takes to get things done or how long it takes to get certain things done or, you know, what the real problem is or underlying issue. And typically they're not fixing, they're not doing any kind of root cause analysis or just basically patching what you've got.
Exactly. And so they may come in and rewipe a computer and restore it because it got some kind of virus on it, but then they're not doing anything after that to make sure that it has continuing antivirus after that. And there's no service level agreement in there to expect that, you know, if I call, they'll get back to me within an hour and that they will get this taken care of. And then as the company grows larger, one of the options that a lot of people do is they look to hire an IT person. And sometimes that comes from within the organization. You have that one person who seems to be technologically gifted, and so you kind of shift that person out of his or her role and into more of a technology position. But then you have the problem of, well, what is their job description really? Is it doing the thing that you hired them for, or is it doing the thing that you now rely on them to keep all your computers and your systems running? Because you have that one person who's the only person who knows how to work this piece of software that is absolutely critical to your business. Or you can start looking from the outside and say, how could we hire either an IT person or, as the company grows, maybe even an IT team?
Well, and I think the other thing that people don't realize is that IT is a wide field. I mean, you know, you're not never an expert in everything. So there's hardware, there's software, there's networking, there's productivity software, there's phones, there's security, there's compliance. And then you get down into specific technology. So it is a very wide field, and not all technology professionals are created equal. The other thing that people don't realize is what the cost is to hire an IT professional like that. I'm talking with somebody right now that they've got sort of a part-time IT person that's coming twice, 2 days a week in. And in my view, it's definitely not enough, because if you look at the industry standards, it's usually to take care of about 70 individuals, you need at least one IT person. But, you know, the cost of an IT professional, just a break fix type of person, somewhere between $40,000 and $62,000 a year. And then if you start stepping up a little bit where they need to have a little bit more experience and understanding, sort of a network or system administrator type, you're talking $60,000 to $82,000 a year. And then if you get into the areas of firewalls and networking and that type of thing, you're talking somewhere between $82,000 and $125,000 a year. And those are, you know, fully, you know, loaded rates with benefits and stuff, but people don't realize what it costs to get that.
Well, that being said, though, that individual that you might hire, mm-hmm, versus having a team like BitWizards, they might be expertise in a few fields, where you have people expertise in every field. So when they draw with BitWizards, whatever problem you have, you've got somebody there that knows how to fix that. Where if you hire an IT person, they might know part of it and they might not.
Yeah, and that's sort of how a typical IT department within a larger organization is set up, and that's what we do. Typically, you have people, and they're a mile wide across technology and then a mile deep in two or three areas, right? So, you know, you may have a person that's an expert in hardware and software, another person that may focus on productivity software, another that is a person that understands phones and phone networks. Security and compliance is another particular area where people tend to specialize on. But in general, to have a team of people to be able to do that is very difficult to staff.
It would cost an awful lot of money to, if a team like yourselves, if they were to hire all of you guys just to work for their company.
Absolutely.
But they can hire you guys a lot less money just for the service you provide.
Well, and IT is, you know, we've said this here before, IT is not a passive activity. It's a proactive activity, and it's something that's absolutely critical to today's business. Whether you're a one-person shop or whether you're a 5,000-person shop of people, right? Mm-hmm. It really doesn't matter. IT has equal weight within all organizations these days.
Sure.
In fact, that's why it's such a wide field, because what you'll notice is that more and more things are being taken over by what we would call technology, right? Like, oh, technology day, it used to be a thing. And it used to be your car was a very mechanical piece of equipment. Now it's just a computer with four wheels on it, right? And so it's happening across the board. Phones. It didn't used to be the purview of an IT person to worry about phones, because that was the telephone company's problem. They would bring in the wiring and they would put the phones on your desks, and it was completely separate. But now we have VoIP phones. The voice over IP phones is pretty typical across the board. So now even our phones have become an IT issue. And security is the same way. Compliance didn't used to be a technology field. That was something that you had with whatever your requirements are by the government. Now, almost 80% of your compliance regulation is probably going to be technology related. So the IT that you bring in for your organization, it's getting wider and wider and wider. The different fields that they have to be not just familiar with, but also up to date and going deep on some of these topics.
And customers are just simply not tolerant these days of companies that don't have their IT act together. And then, of course, if you get yourself into trouble, you know, you have a data breach or something that happens, not just the customer, you know, that can end up in legal issues. And the courts are becoming less tolerant of it. I happen to know another CEO that basically had a guy come in and work for him, and the guy basically took a laptop with data and information out and then used that to set up a competing business, took the individual to court, and basically the judge told him, he said, you know what, you didn't have your act together. He says, I'm going to rule basically 50-50 on this deal. Don't come back to my courtroom again unless you've got your act together and do the things that you're supposed to do as a business to protect yourself. Basically, the guy didn't protect himself beforehand. So as judges, you know, there's a group of older judges that are kind of going away. Younger, more tech-savvy judges are coming in, and they're ruling a little bit differently than what the other judges. They're saying, hey, it's your responsibility to do this. You know, Sam mentioned phones, and, you know, just a phone itself, think about it. When people come in phones, you know, we are worried about device management today, because some of that business data exists on people's individual phones. Right? How do you control that data? If you've got a salesperson that has access to your CRM or that has your customer data or information on it, that's critical, right? If they walk out the door, what happens to that? Where does your responsibility end? So IT is critical for every business today.
Gosh, yeah. You know, so many businesses probably don't think they need IT, but in fact, they really do need IT, because your business isn't going to survive unless you're out there with technology, on the internet, with social media and all of that, and protected from getting viruses, getting hacked, and getting your business destroyed.
Absolutely.
But Dan, those things are a fad.
Well, and there's pros and cons to all the different ways of handling your IT, for sure. I mean, the pro of I'll fix it myself is that it doesn't cost you anything in the short term. It's the freest solution there is I'll just take care of it myself. But there's plenty of cons to that too, and that is, are you willing to also run your business and try to stay up to date with all of the things that you need to be aware of? And then even on the break fix model, where you have your wife's cousin's nephew that can come in and fix it, or a full-time IT company that can be break fix, then the con there is it is pretty expensive to do that. But there's the pro is, well, I don't have any ongoing recurring costs. However, that actually also makes it bad for budgeting. Having an IT person means that that person needs to be broad spectrum. You really can't hire someone right out of high school and expect them to learn on the job. But the pro with having someone there is they really do know the business, and you can text them at 2 a.m. and say, why is my printer not printing? But there's plenty of cons. We've tried to find the best of all of those worlds with the most pros and say, what if we can do this IT as a service, managed IT services, where you have a full team. We have about a dozen engineers on our team right now who are wide across the board, but deep in their own specific areas. But with the lower costs of being able to only pay for it when you use it kind of model.
And well, you have a company like BitWizards where you don't have to do crisis management on a regular basis.
Absolutely.
Because that stinks.
It does.
All right, guys.
BitWizards from the spell book. From the spell book.
So from the spell book is where we take and demystify some technological geek speak. And so what okay, we're what going to it? Tell you about today is a term that I know many of you have heard is TCP/IP. It's usually done with a capital TCP and a slash and then an IP. And so in base terms, what TCP/IP is, it allows one computer to talk to another computer via the internet through compiling packets of data and sending them to the right location. So the TCP part is called the transmission protocol. All right. And that's the thing that it's basically, it's the top layer and it's the responsibility of aggregating a bunch of data or information into packets of data and then transmitting them. And then the IP part of this is the bottom part of the layer. And it's basically like the internet location or GPS. It says, where does it go? And you've often seen this with the four sets of numbers, right? Like 10.1.1.2, something of that nature.
Okay.
And what that basically says is it says, I want you to take this packet of data and transmit it over the wire to this specific location or IP.
Okay.
And another term that we'll just throw out here just to make a is DNS. And so what that does is it takes that IP portion, which is that 10.1.1.2, right? Okay. And turn it into a human readable name like www.dansplace.com. Right.
Okay.
So that now takes a human name and overlays it on top of that IP protocol.
Because you've probably heard the term IP address around. If you've ever watched CSI, they've been like, find the IP address and then zoom and enhance is what they're
doing. Well, everybody has their own IP address.
They're always looking for the IP address.
Yeah.
And so every computer network has its own internal set of IP addresses so that computers within and phones and different devices can talk to each other and know exactly where they live. Each one gets its own address. Usually those are handed out either by a server or by the firewalls, handing out IP addresses to devices as they start looking for a network connection. But then on the broader scale, across the entire internet, everybody has their own unique IP address across the board. Consumer, if you are paying for Cox Internet at your house, that IP address changes every now and then. Every couple of days, they recycle that pool of IP addresses, and it doesn't really matter as far as you're concerned. You're on the internet. But for businesses, we always say, well, what we should do is get you set up with a static IP address, which is basically locking in the IP address for your business and saying it will always be this. Bitwizards has had our IP address for what, 20 years, I would imagine, almost from the get-go, that same IP address. So now when we set up servers and services and applications and things like that, that has a single address on the internet that everybody can see. And then throwing in that third layer, the DNS, that's the domain name resolution that goes with it, the domain name service that says www.bitwizards.com actually is this IP address on the internet. And so this is one of the things that we do when we work with our clients is help get all of that squared away, because a lot of times when your computer says, I can't find the internet, it's because it wasn't able to get an IP address, or it got the wrong one, or is fighting with something else on the network.
That's like your key to get into the internet then, huh?
Mailing address is exactly where that is, that it'll always be that one spot on the internet.
When you do that, that's your identifier. Then that would be identifying this particular computer is always going to have this IP address.
Absolutely. That's exactly right.
But every time you plug or unplug, like off the internet, your IP address can change, right?
Yep.
So you're going to make it one.
Yeah, your phone does that already. If you're on LTE or 4G or whatever, you already have a public IP address of your phone, and it is changing constantly throughout the day, which, again, isn't normally a problem at all, because all you need to do is make sure that your phone's aware of the internet and the internet's aware of your phone, and then you can keep scrolling through Instagram.
Gotcha. All right, guys. It's just about that time where if you'd like to talk about one of your clients.
Yeah, I would love to, actually. I love that we get this opportunity at the end of our show each week to talk about some of our clients, because we love working with just the wide variety of people we get to work with. And today I want to give a big BitWizards thank you and shout out to our customer, the Air Force Enlisted Village in Paquito Bayou over in Shalimar. And the Air Force Enlisted Village, AFEV, is a nonprofit organization whose core mission is to provide a safe, secure home for surviving spouses of retired enlisted U.S. airmen. So we want to say thank you to Brooke McLean and Ryan Price for choosing BitWizards. We've worked with them on some SharePoint projects, on some networking projects to really see what we can do to help them secure their infrastructure and modernize their environment. Thank you to the whole hardworking team there for allowing Bitwizards to serve you. We love working with Air Force Enlisted Village.
Yep, Air Force Enlisted Village and Bitwizards would be a good match because they do a lot of wonderful things like you were just talking about. I'm intimately involved with those guys myself. And thank you for helping them out because that's a wonderful thing. And you guys are pretty awesome at what you do. Now, how can they find you guys? If somebody wants your services, how can they find you?
Well, you can go to bitwizards.com. It's pretty simple. www.bitwizards.com.
Okay. That sounds pretty easy. Can they call you? You got a phone number?
Yeah, you can also call us at 850-226-4200, or you want to give them the MITS line, Sam?
Yeah, our MITS line is basically a helpless line. You got a problem, call 850-864-4558.